Welcome to the OTs Gone Rogue podcast, where we share real stories about real OTs who are choosing to think outside the box and do things differently. I'm your host, Melissa Lapointe. Over the years, I've had the pleasure of connecting with the most remarkable therapists who are finding their way as thought leaders, change makers, and heart-led entrepreneurs. They've helped to inspire me to think big and dig deep in my own healing journey, and it's now time to bring these conversations to a bigger stage. Together, we're going to share stories about overcoming adversity, finding our people, and taking the road less traveled, even when it feels messy and uncomfortable. Okay, are you ready to join us? This is the OTs Gone Rogue podcast. Hey everyone, hope this finds you doing well. Today we are switching things up just a little bit. So a few months ago, I had the pleasure of joining my friend Claire Mockridge on her podcast, The Pelvicpreneur. Claire is based out of the UK and we connected several years ago through our mutual love of restorative exercise and foot health as it relates to the pelvic floor. She's also an online entrepreneur and teaches fitness professionals her non-Kegel, foot-first, full-body approach to pelvic floor dysfunction so that they can help their clients get consistent relief from their symptoms and offer them effective long-term solutions to their problems. Claire and I have a lot of similarities in our businesses, and it was a lot of fun to join her on her podcast, where we talked about occupational therapy and how OTs fit in the bigger picture of client-centered care when it comes to pelvic floor dysfunction. After listening to the replay of that particular episode, I realized that it's sometimes nice to be interviewed as opposed to being the interviewee. I asked Claire if we could share this episode on my show as well, and she was all for it. This is a great opportunity for my listeners to get to know me a little better, given women's health was the instigator in terms of my going rogue story. All right, are you ready? Let's roll out this interview where I do a deeper dive into the world of pelvic health.
Hi there, Melissa, and welcome to the Pelvicpreneur podcast.
Oh, thanks, Claire.
So I think it might be nice perhaps just to start with a quick introduction from you. So it might be nice just to ask you, so what you do and who you serve.
Sure. I'm hesitant to say what I do without bringing my team into it, because at this point, my team, leading my team is a big part of what I do. So our team supports heart-led OTs, coaches, so OTs being occupational therapists, coaches, wellness consultants. So occupational therapy is definitely the primary profession that we work with, but we also work with a number of practitioners who perhaps are no longer registered as occupational therapists and they have taken on different roles. So we can talk about that. But we help them to grow to start and grow a relationship-based business in the online space. So we do this through coaching and training programs. And so I love to empower through education. I love to do some gentle butt kicking through our coaching. And really my zone of genius is definitely in helping people see the 30,000 foot view and then to break that down into small bite-sized chunks. And that's where the mindset piece comes in. So really helping people to build that roadmap and to get out of overwhelm and see the different ways that they can take steps forward. Because for a lot of health professionals, we didn't get business training in university. And if anything, a lot of our training in university has hardwired us to fail in the business world. So we have a lot of really growing from the inside out and rewiring some of those neural thought patterns that we were set up in so many ways in our university training to promote the profession, support everyone, work hard, put in more time, ask for permission, and not value yourself, and to feel guilty if you're making money, if you're being profitable as a health professional. So there's a lot of stuff that we unpackage in our coaching and training programs. Mm,
that sounds fascinating. Yeah. So how did you get to specialize working with occupational therapists? I know you've got quite a journey. So yes. I'm just going to give you the floor there, Melissa, so you take as long time as you need to just tell your story.
So I graduated. So I have a psych degree, and then I completed my occupational therapy degree and was working in pediatrics. 2005. Oh my goodness. I think I had that right. 2005, I started working in pediatrics. That's how I ended up in British Columbia. So I started on the East Coast of Canada, where I grew up, where I completed my training, relocated to the West Coast for this position. So it was early intervention and was with a nonprofit organization. And I practiced and was quite happy to practice in that position until I was pregnant. And in Canada, we are very blessed to have a 50-week maternity leave. So when we have our baby, we go off for 50 weeks. And I, at that point, so a couple of years before that, had completed my first training to be a doula and then continued on to be a birth coach. So it was something I was very interested in, but I hadn't synced the professional worlds yet. And I had an emergency C-section with my son. And my rehab brain kicked in right away. And also I was appalled because I had worked in orthopedics. I had worked in rehab in the past through fieldwork placements. I was very aware that if you have a knee surgery, a hip surgery, back surgery, you meet with an occupational therapist, you meet with a physiotherapist, you go through prehab, you go through different ways of modifying your environment. You then have rehab before you are discharged. And here I was, major abdominal surgery. And status quo, I was discharged within, I think I went home early because I advocated for that. I did not want to be in the hospital. So within 18 hours, I went home and there was no rehab plan whatsoever. So I created my own recovery plan fairly quickly and was appalled at the healthcare system. So I continued, and for occupational therapists to be working in maternal health at that point. So this is now, I had my son in 2011. 2012 is when I resigned from my job, and it was very scary because I wanted to continue working in pediatrics, but really have a holistic approach to peds that included maternal health. And at that point, there were no jobs in existence that I could find. There was no blueprint as to how to do this. There was a lot of fear and anxiety about the OT police. You know, what would my association, my provincial licensure, what would they have to say about this? So I started my private practice. So I had a brick and mortar practice in 2013. I had completed some training at that point, and I'm a lifelong learner. So yeah. Training for me, it's very exciting to sign up for a course and get the syllabus. It's like, oh my gosh, I can't wait. Is there a test? Huge geek. So at that point in 2013, I had started my business, but I was in denial that I was in business. I was following my heart. This was my passion. I really resisted the words entrepreneur. I don't come from an entrepreneurial family. And, you know, I was very naive and I had very little understanding of the business world. So the first couple of years were a little rough. And so in 2013, I started my brick and mortar practice. So it was a combination of pediatrics and prenatal, postnatal. And I still had this child who did not sleep. So my husband was working a permanent graveyard shift, meaning I was really left to my own devices and going a little bit crazy. So he woke up every 2 hours fairly consistently I don't want to say every 2 hours consistently until he was seven, but it was every 2 hours consistently until, unless he was in the nook, which is in my armpit with his head on my shoulder. And that would be the only way I could get him to even relax enough to sleep. So that went on until he was about four or five. He started sleeping consistently through the night when he was seven. So it was a long period of not a lot of sleep. Some of my earlier business decisions may not have been the best because I was very sleep deprived. But in 2015, again, really struggling with the way our contracts worked with the brick and mortar, we would get paid bigger sums every 6 to 8 weeks. So there wasn't a lot of consistency with cash flow. I started my business very, very broke, for lack of a better word. So there was no cash equity. You know, I always joked that I was at a crossroads. Do I claim bankruptcy?
Wow.
Or wow. Do I start a business? And I started a business.
Wow, my word.
Well, it wasn't to that yet. It was, I think, going 2 years into business where I wasn't paying myself consistently. And that's when I really had to decide, okay, where am I going with this? And I persevered and kept going. And then it did. So for anyone who's just starting a business, it does get better. I will reassure you. But in the beginning, it was tough, especially with a brick and mortar where there is overhead. I had an office space, I had equipment, I had assessment tools, I had an admin assistant. So in 2015, I had a lot of OTs reaching out. I was a huge advocate for OTs working in prenatal, postnatal health. Mm-hmm. At that point, I had already started my restorative exercise training with Katie mm-hmm. Bowman, which is mm-hmm. how I originally connected with you. Mm-hmm. And so I was continuing down this path. And at that point, even with my business, you know, we started to offer sessions around workplace wellness. And I was doing sessions in terms of preconception and fertility. And I would have clients, I think my oldest client at that point was 74. So my youngest client, I had peds, so I had some infants. And then my oldest client was 74. And I still had a women's health, holistic client-centered approach to what I was doing. So in 2015 is when I created my first online course. No idea what I was doing. I'm very comfortable teaching in a room with other people. So I thought, okay, I'm just going to pretend that there are other people in the room and I will, I remember I look back at some of my earlier lessons and I shake my head because I had 90-minute, 2-hour PowerPoint sessions because that is what I would do.
Yeah.
In a live workshop, I would give them a morning break, a lunch break, an afternoon break, and off we would go. And in 2015, we didn't know a lot about online courses at the time. So that's what I did. And still had good results, I think in part because my students didn't know any better at the time. So we had OTs from around the world. It was really exciting. So 2015, 2016, my first course was an integrative approach to prenatal health. And then I added on the postnatal component. And I didn't know anything about niching down. So my online course, I was targeting physios, OTs, fitness professionals, childbirth workers, you name it. I had like everyone under the sun because in my mind, that would create more revenue if I targeted more people. That is false. But again, I did not know that at the time. But that's where things got started. And then after people were going through that course, it was a very extensive course with a lot of information. Again, I like to make things hard on myself. And as people were completing it, they were coming back to me with, okay, I understand how this fits within our model. I'm excited, but what next? And they were getting stuck in the business piece. So they were really gung-ho to do more, but then they were saying like, I'm stuck. Where do I go? What do I do? And again, tapping into my passion around teaching and mentoring, I started to do more on the business side of things. Okay, here are some ideas around marketing. Here are some ideas around setting up your business. Here are some tips and tools around partnerships and affiliations, around funding sources, around how to explain what you do to other professionals, around being confident in what you do, and really seeing your unique value and how you're supporting your clients. And then it just continued on, really lit a fire. I loved what I was doing. And in 2017, life circumstances, we were evacuated for 2 months in 2017 because of the wildfires in British Columbia. So I found myself away from my office space. I had my laptop and a microphone with me because I had been recording the final module of my course. We were on vacation when it happened, so we didn't have a chance to pack. We each had a small backpack with us when we were evacuated. And then it was 2 months that we ended up being out of the home. My husband came home sooner. But with the smoke, the air quality was so bad that I stayed away with my son. We just traveled and couch surfed and made a summer of it. But that, again, I was still paying rent. I still had overhead. I was still paying for my utilities. So I had a tough decision to make when I came back in September. So that summer, I launched my first membership community because what else do you do when you're evacuated with a laptop and a microphone? I thought, okay, here we go. let's launch a membership community. So I had $500. I had worked up to $500 recurring every month, which my expenses were a little more than $500. But it was something. It was giving me something. And when I came back in September, I had already signed up to work with a business advisor because we were using the year to transition out of my brick and mortar and go full time into coaching and consulting. And so we had started the process in June, ironically, and then in July we were evacuated. So when we got back in September, I drew a firm line in the sand and I actually registered as a non-practicing OT. And I ended up contracting to another agency and mentoring with one of their therapists to transfer our clients over to them. And I stopped doing any type of community work and I went all in on my coaching consulting. It took a little while, like there was a transition period between letting go of my brick and mortar. So it took roughly 6 months for us to, you know, I was mentoring and transitioning people over. And it was a blessing in disguise. I love what I do. And I liked what I did before. There was a lot of stuff I didn't necessarily like, let's be honest. I loved the client interaction piece. But the red tape and report writing, and there were pieces of it that I was happy to let go of. And in terms of revenue, so within that next year, we were able to generate the same amount of revenue as we had the year prior. So we didn't go down. It wasn't a huge increase. We had stayed about the same. But when I looked at the amount of work that I had to put into it, and when I looked at our profit margins, there was a drastic increase. In terms of when I had my brick and mortar versus when I'm now working from home, fully online, you know, everything, just expenses had gone down significantly. So it felt a lot lighter. So that's when I really went all in with coaching and consulting. Yeah. So here we are.
Thank you for sharing that story there, Melissa. I can kind of actually resonate with a couple of things you've said, because you know that I've quit my fitness, my in-person classes November last year. And it's a completely different work kind of environment when you transition online. And what you said about expenses, like honestly, for the first 3 months when my credit card came through, I'm like, something wrong here. So moving online, I was like, this is half the bill. There must be some like mistake if I accidentally like log some other like different credit card with these expenses or something. It's just phenomenal how much, you know, moving from in person to actually online saves you. Also, I kind of resonate because my story is a bit similar in the sense that I had wanted to step away from client work for a while. It's really fulfilling, isn't it? Like training other professionals. It's just because that the mindset stuff you're actually touching on a lot there, Melissa, in your intro, it's so ingrained in our mind that it's, you know, just simple things like imposter syndrome and comparativitis and things like that. It's so real with the types of professionals that we deal with. But even just, you know, kind of saying, well, can't you just stop following that person on Instagram? Or like, you know, stop comparing yourself, because no one does what you do the way you do it. You know, it's just little things like that that's really kind of quite interesting to get across to other individuals that we work with. So I'm not 100% sure that all my audience know kind of where occupational therapists like fit in the framework. And so I wonder
I said very doubtful.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. So I wonder if you could just go on a little sort of tour of like, where do OTs fit in with like health, wellness, movement? And then what about kind of where they fit in with as it pertains to, say, pelvic floor or the pelvis or something like that? Would be good to let us know.
Well, occupational therapy is the hidden gem. And it's the ongoing joke all through our training. You know, you're going to graduate and feel like you can change the world and no one's going to understand what OT does. So there's definitely work to be done in our profession in terms of how we are marketing ourselves, in terms of not individually. So yes, individually on a business level, but in terms of, I think every university out there will have their grads create a video of some type that is, what is OT? You see them, I see them everywhere. But essentially with occupational therapy, And it's hard to give specific examples in that it is a very broad, you know, we all have our unique approach based on our own experiences, our own training. So for example, when I was in occupational therapy school, we had some students in our class came in with masters in French literature, kinesiology, psychology, science backgrounds, pre-med backgrounds. So there's such a variety even coming into the profession. And essentially with occupational therapy, it's really looking at our occupations. So breaking it down into the day-to-day activities, whether it's related to leisure, to self-care, to productivity, but that is one of our superpowers, is mm-hmm. to look at what the client wants. So a client-centered approach. It's not about what we think is best for the client. It's really using our communication and our interviewing skills to help the client identify what is important to them. So if a client doesn't want to, or it's not important to learn how to cook, it's not what we're going to focus on. So really, again, identifying what is important to that client. And then one of our superpowers is breaking that down into tasks, into looking at occupational performance, looking at the environment, looking at relationships, looking at spirituality, the emotional, the mental, the physical components. So as you can imagine, it's a very broad, you know, approach, but now we have individual therapists coming in. And in terms of health and wellness, so we have a long history in our profession in terms of health prevention and promotion. And so not waiting until someone is really ill. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are OTs working in hospital settings and acute care settings and rehab settings. But we also have a number of therapists who are in community organizations, who are advocating, who are creating programs based on their training to help. So we, you know, and it's across the lifespan. So my area of specialty was pediatrics. So that's how I came into women's health and pelvic health. And interestingly enough, I was able to go back and see, oh, when we were doing certain trainings, we actually did cover pelvic health in children, because in terms of airways, breathing, core stability, sensory processing, there's a lot of overlap. So, but it's not talked about a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so for me in peds, there were a lot of natural, and my in for pelvic health was through biomechanics. Like that was my approach. I'm not trained to do internal assessments. That was never on my wish list. I'm a generalist. I will always be a generalist. And for me, part of it was, we don't talk about this. I think of all the different ways that, you know, in my OT training that we didn't talk about this. And I had chronic back pain. We were sitting in the same chairs at the same table all day long in our university training that were made for the universal size of 6 feet tall. I am not 6 feet tall. You know, we were taught to tuck for proper lifting techniques. It was tuck your pelvis, tuck your pelvis, anytime, tuck your pelvis, tuck your pelvis. Part of my story is a hypertonic pelvic floor dysfunction and tailbone pain. And what I discovered, surprise, surprise, on my journey was that the chronic tucking pelvis was exacerbating everything. So once I retrained myself to stop tucking, it was huge. And I thought, you know what? Why did I not know this before? Yeah. Why do we not talk about this?
So obviously we have kind of a similar audience in the sense that we train trainers, yeah, train professionals. Mm-hmm. So I'm fairly certain you could come up with some kind of common problems that you see occupational therapists have when they're working with clients. So I'd be interested to know how you're going to answer that question.
Oh my goodness. Marketing is a big one. Mm. With the training that I've done with OTs, so marketing and sales is, I love it. I love it, which is so funny because selling used to make me break out in a cold sweat 5 years ago, whereas now I love it. But marketing is definitely a challenge. Mm. So many OTs out there, because common question, what do OTs do? I see a lot of OTs, prime real estate of their website is educating the world on what OT does. And I'm like, no, your people don't care.
They don't.
You can have a million certifications, your people don't care. They care about how you can solve their problems. They don't care about the letters after your name. They don't know what they mean, most of them anyways. So really getting clear on marketing, and that means niching down, which is very uncomfortable for most therapists. I would argue most health professionals have a hard time really niching down. It's counterintuitive to our two-hour training, but in the business world, you have to do it. So marketing is a big one. Self-promotion, you know, being seen. I support a lot of therapists in being seen. We want it, but we don't. We put ourselves out there and we're anxious. You know, I finally launched the website. Oh my gosh, I'm going to have a panic attack. So there's a lot of push and pull, in part that white coat syndrome. So in, you know, in therapy school, it was frowned upon to promote yourself as an individual. You were meant to promote the profession as a whole. So now in a business model, if you promote the profession as a whole and do not promote yourself as an individual, good luck finding clients.
Exactly.
So marketing is huge.
Yeah.
And along marketing, messaging, writing copy. Health professionals love to write using insider language. And you know, you're not writing a report, you're writing copy. And what does that mean? So really understanding writing in what's called write speak at a fourth grade level in a way that draws someone in. It's tough for a lot of health professionals because their natural way of writing is to write more report style, which I've received some emails written that way. And I can tell you, they're not very intriguing.
I'm not too interesting, not wanting to go back
and read it again. So definitely with writing and messaging, I'm really getting to know your audience. Pricing. Oh, goodness. Pricing ourselves, pricing our programs, and then really standing by it and honoring our value, honoring what we bring to the table. That's so challenging. Again, and I would say for health professionals in general. Mm. And then last but not least, delegating.
Oh my goodness.
The amount of time I see, no, I'm not going to pay for that. I'm going to go learn myself. It's like, okay, good luck with that. You don't even know what questions to ask. You've never done this before. No, I'm just getting started. I'm not going to invest in a coach or a consultant because I'm just getting started. I don't have the revenue to support that. So instead, I'm going to spend 3 years figuring out what you could have done with me in a half day session. But doing it all themselves. And I mean, we were talking about this before we started recording in terms, we both have podcasts. Well, mine's not published yet. Maybe by the time this episode's published, it will be. But I've started delegating right off the bat. It's not my zone of genius. It never will be. Sure, I'm a smart person. I can figure this out. But why?
Delegation. That's something I have done for years, actually, years and years. I had a virtual assistant. I think I had the same virtual assistant for at least 5 or 6 years. She unfortunately didn't quite have the skills I needed to transition with me online. But I can't tell you, I am at my happiest when I'm delegating. I love it. I really do. And like, you know, when you open your inbox and the first 3 or 4 emails are like from people that have done work for you, it's like the best feeling in the world because you're like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. So do a bit of edit on that one, sign off on that one, share that out, whatever. It's like, yeah, just, it feels like you're, as you say, you are then the CEO of your own business. And that's kind of, and doing the stuff that you really enjoy doing, which whether it's like client facing work or whatever it is that you do. It just, I think it saves so much energy. Well, let's change the tune a little bit here now then, Melissa. Let's go positive now, shall we? Do you have like a really good success story of a client as an OT that you've worked with, you've coached with? Can you tell me like a little bit about their story and their journey that you've actually, and the difference that you've made from working with you?
So I can, I'm going to make this a little, so part of my, I know everyone has a different approach and maybe this is because I have come into this coaching consulting work with a strong clinical background, but I also support a lot of people through major life transitions. So as they're growing their business, things feel messy. I have a number of clients who've gone through divorce, death in the family, birth. You know, I started working with them when they're pregnant and through to postpartum while they're in business. Children having, you know, family health situations, adult caregiving, parents. Like, so there have been a lot, and I consider myself kind of the keeper of the stories. So I hold space for a lot of practitioners who are doing pretty amazing things. So in terms of a lot of the work that I do, you know, definitely. So in moments of, you know, I've worked with therapists who are very overwhelmed because of life circumstances. So sometimes it's okay. We don't have to focus on a growth plan right now. We have to focus on a way we can tread water so that you can honor this transition you're going through and honor the experiences, the curveballs that are being thrown your way. You don't have to necessarily be growing your business through this. We can put in a recovery plan so that you can keep your head above water, so that you can pull over and nurture yourself, your family, whatever it is you need to be doing. And that means saying no to things, and that means reinforcing our boundaries. So I've definitely supported therapists who feel like they're having a breakdown. And I always, you know, is it a breakdown or is it a breakthrough? Because in order for that breakthrough to happen, usually beforehand, there needs to be the breakdown. That's the nature of the beast. So in our coaching calls, when people come on saying, I feel overwhelmed and I feel like I'm on the verge of a breakdown, I celebrate with them. I said, this means you're on the verge of something amazing. And can we pause and celebrate that? No, this means, oh, I'm so confused. What comes on the other side of confusion? Clarity. So can we celebrate that you're in the weeds right now? I will help you get out. But let's just take a moment and honor that.
Let's talk, because I'm kind of asking all my podcast guests similar questions at the end of each sort of episode. So let's talk about the dreaded COVID. How has COVID affected your business, like positively, negatively? Can you just give us a couple of brief moments of how that's affected you?
Yeah, of course. Well, first of all, acknowledging that COVID, you know, it's a world pandemic. It's affecting all of us. We are all waking up to a shift that needs to happen personally, professionally, in terms of entrepreneurship, different way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And I'm an optimist. That's not to say I don't get stuck sometimes, but I'm an optimist. And I do believe that there is an awakening happening and we are opening up to a different way of doing things. And for health professionals, that's very important because often we can get stuck in our old ways and the world's changing. So in terms of my own experience, so my son was in grade two, he's now in grade three, but he was in grade two when the pandemic hit. And in many ways, I was very set up. I had already been I'm very established, had a strong reputation for supporting therapists in the online space. So there was a lot of opportunity. With that being said, I now found myself with, so I say an only child. So I have a stepson who doesn't live with us. He lives with his grandparents. Mm-hmm. So when I think of Max, I always think of him as, you know, he has a sibling, but in terms of how he's living, he's an only child. And found myself, my husband continued to work. So he was considered an essential worker and never stopped. And he works long hours. Mm. So I found myself alone with my son all the time and homeschooling, no childcare, we were not seeing our grandparents. So we weren't seeing my stepson. So there was that added stress because my husband was continuing to work and my mother-in-law already, you know, she had been coming off 2 month bout of pneumonia before the pandemic hit. So we were really trying to keep our distance. So really, you know, I was the playmate. I was the coach. I was the friend. I was everything. So my son, it was in June. He said, you know what, Mom, you and I have been spending an awful lot of time together and I'm kind of getting sick of you. Oh, bless you, child. I feel the same. So that was really hard because I wanted to work. I wanted to work full time. I felt like we were really on this precipice of taking things to the next level. And my husband continued to work out of the home. And I was very angry and resentful about that. Then I finally wrapped my head around it and got over the woe is me and recognized I have to pull back. I want to be working. I want to put my foot on the gas. There is so much potential for what we're doing. I'm supporting so many therapists and I had to put my foot on the brake and it really was hard. So I finally wrapped my head around that and then we got sick. So that shifted. So we had all of the COVID symptoms. My husband was sick. He had to stay home for 10 full days. I don't get sick very often. I was sick, but we didn't meet the criteria for testing at the time. At the time, they weren't testing. They were only testing if you were a health professional or if you required hospitalization. So we had fever. We had headache. We had a nasty cough. We had chills, we had everything, but we didn't meet the criteria. So we quarantined, and then my husband was home for 10 days because he had to be home. So all of a sudden it went from, you know, I can work again. But it was really, you know, with as spring approached, so again, being in Canada in May, I started with some house renos. My husband would come home and I would have the floor torn up, or I would have all these different things on the go. He didn't know what to do. And because again, with my son being home alone with me, he was getting a lot of screen time if I was on the screen a lot. So even tuning into my coaching calls, I'm in a coaching program myself. I was just finding it really hard to stay balanced and really aware of what I was doing, because if I was on my laptop, he would generally generate towards his iPad. So I reduced my work hours. So May and June, I reduced my work hours. I leaned on my team a little bit more. And I got outside. So I started gardening and painting our deck. And because then my son would come out and help, and he would end up playing pretend and doing his thing. And in May and June, we didn't have a drop in revenue.
Really?
So my assistant was like, oh, maybe we should get your hand out of some of the pots.
Yes.
Maybe we're on to something, because I was able to work less hours and we actually did not see a drop in revenue. So it really instilled, okay, maybe I don't have to do everything. And I really leaned into delegating. I really leaned into a different way of doing things. I had a number of one-on-one clients at the time, and how it works, my clients keep me on retainer, and then we have calls, they pay me at the beginning of the month. And then we have so many one-on-one calls, plus they have unlimited access to me through Voxer and email. And we lost one client because of COVID, you know, life circumstances. I said, that's fine. But I said to my assistant, I don't want to fill that spot. And then a month later, we lost another client. And I said, I don't want to fill her spot either. And it just kept going down, but I was shifting over to a group model. And so it really opened up my eyes in terms of organization and delegation, and in terms of leveraged offers. So really practicing what I was preaching. So we've continued to let go of our one-on-one clients as they, because they work with us anywhere from 6 months to 2 years, depending. Some of them have been with me for quite some time. But as they've been, and it's not forever, and it's not meant to be forever, and as they have transitioned away from the one-on-one support, I haven't been filling their spots. Yeah. So when I look at my calendar now, I have a lot of flexibility. And this was highlighted in one of my, you know, I was really stressed. I had showed up on a coaching call with one of my coaches, and I'd said, I'm not homeschooling in the way that I want to. I'm not parenting in the way that I want to. I'm feeling really stressed. I feel like I'm dropping the ball in my coaching program. I feel like I'm not showing up. And she just said, what if you had a business that allowed you to homeschool how you want, that allowed you to parent and show up for your son how you want, that allowed you to jump into these renovations, you know, these renovations that I'd been putting off forever, and then discovering I'm quite handy, actually. So really excited about that. And she said, what if, can you visualize what that business might look like? Because you're in charge. There's no status quo of how you're growing a business. There's no reason why you can't have a business that is still growing, that is still profitable, that honors the different needs that you have at this stage of your life. So I really embraced that. And now I've felt really balanced. And now that my son is back in school full time, I've continued on that path and really being aware of where my time's going.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go on to another question here, which is, what's been your biggest like whoops moment in business? Because we, you know, we keep talking about like challenges here, Melissa.
And how long do we have?
Yeah.
I'm joking.
What sort of springs to mind when I ask you that question?
Oh, my Lord. So first of all, if you're in business, you're going to fail. And that is just, it's a rite of passage. Yeah. Get over it. Fail forward. Fail fast. Chalk it up to a learning experience. The more you're clinging on to this idea of perfection, the slower it's going to go. Rip that Band-Aid off. So I've been leaning into that for quite a number of years now in terms of failing. So gosh, when I say how long do we have? I have wow, the list would go on. What are some of the bigger ones? Saying yes to things that weren't a heck yes, again, because of, you know, oh, it's going to pay the bills, or oh, so I've had some work scenarios that were exhausting that I couldn't wait to wrap up or finish, or, you know, and telling myself I'm never doing this again. Why did I do that? But again, there are no regrets. It got me to where I am. And now I'm much better with boundaries and saying no. My very first website, I fell into the pressure of making it perfect and spent way, I always joke how it was like the fancy expensive pair of high heels that go in your closet that you never use. So that was my website. It was beautiful. So it was so aesthetically pleasing. It was a very toxic work relationship with the designer that I had a hard time getting out of the contract. Stress response every time I would see her name pop up in my inbox, went several $1,000s over the budget. And it was HTML code. So I couldn't even change anything myself. So I ended up a year later hiring somebody to bring me over to a WordPress site. And the person that I had hired, she's lovely. Many of you may have seen her GIFs. She was on a podcast, and I can't remember if she was hosting or if she was a guest on it. And I remember doing my movement exercises. So I was on the floor doing my movement program, listening to her podcast.
Right.
And in this podcast episode, she starts talking about one of her clients who had spent their savings on this website. And she was going through this story of, anyhow, I realized pretty early in that it was me she was talking about. I'm like, no. Oh my goodness. I'm the story for someone else now, and how this is what's propelled her to do the work that she does. And when she sees people get taken advantage of, so it was, you know, geared towards web designers and practice with integrity. And anyhow, when I realized I was the story, I'm like, oh, wow, that was a big oops. And oh, thank goodness word. I was doing my movement practice because that helped. Yeah. I went into rhomboid push-up, Claire. I was just deep breathing rhomboid push-ups, managing the anxiety. If I would have been driving, I think I would have had a full-blown panic attack. So that was a big one. That was a big whoops, that whole website debacle.
I've not had a good run with website designers either, actually. Yes. And I'm pretty sure I have mentioned this in another podcast episode, but yeah, they kind of just hold you to ransom in some instances. I can remember having a website designer. I can't remember what the quote was, but it was, you know, you had a couple of zeros at the end. And I ended up actually just walking away. I'd paid a deposit, you know, not for the whole sort of full, just to get him started. And it was just not a good relationship at all, actually. So you just sort of draw a line, clear the slate, try and get someone. I think I've actually had probably five website designers. The one I'm currently with is exceptional. I'm keeping on to her, you know, holding on to her for my dear life here at the moment, because she's very good, very responsive.
Yeah, I still do that one. So because this is the Pelvicpreneur podcast, another one that I will share. So I was interviewing somebody for a contract position, and I decided, because I like to do everything, I'm not very status quo. And I was like, you know what, let's go for a hike. I'm going to interview you over a hike. And we went hiking, and I had a large coffee before we went hiking. And it was my first time really getting to know her. So I didn't want to pee in a bush while I was, like informal interview. And then we popped out, and she lives in more of suburbia, where I live on an acre of property, walking distance to that. So I had said I would walk her home, and I knew I had to pee and I had to pee and I had to pee. And then we got in front of her home, and I thought, do I ask to go into the bathroom? I'm like, no, I can make it home. Anyhow, I went bent down to tie my shoe, and all of a sudden my bladder let go. Gray pants on, peed my pants, like full on. I mean, full on, my bladder let go. And I stood up, and she looked down, and she said, your shoes are leaking.
My word.
So that was a big whoops, peeing your pants during a job interview. Yeah. With that being said, I was interviewing her to do contract work in prenatal, postnatal health. So she was a kinesiologist and a fitness instructor. And I had, again, the gray pants was the worst part. So I went in, I used the bathroom, and I said, could you just drive me home now instead of, like, I don't want to walk home through suburbia. And on the drive, she was so nonchalant about it. She didn't have kids at the time. And she had said, so this is probably pretty common, isn't it? And she said, is this how you got into pelvic health? And I said, no, I said, I've never, like, bladder control was never a problem. I said, there was once, but that was in my 20s in university. And it was, like, be honest, it was drug and alcohol related and partying. But that's a whole other story.
That is, yeah.
But I said, no, I've never, like, this isn't typical. This isn't how I got into this work. And she said, well, it's going to happen, though. It's probably pretty common with the population that I'm going to be working with. She said, so in a way, it's good that this happened because we can normalize it. And I just looked at her and I said, you've got the job.
That is amazing. I love that story. I'm not sure whether you're aware, actually. It's kind of the whoops moment is it's a play on pelvic floor dysfunction, actually. There are a lot of TV ads here in the UK that use whoops moment, meaning whoops, I've just leaked. So the very fact that you've just now shared a story which is actually quite literal to the whoops moment, my audience are going to be in stitches. Absolutely. It's just brilliant. I really like that.
I have no problem being vulnerable if it makes people feel better.
That's it, yeah. Okay. Well, Melissa, it's been amazing chatting to you. I feel like we're, like, obviously best friends for life, you know, chat to you forever.
Yes. Well, when the world opens up, I'll get over and I'll visit you, Claire.
I know. Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, you're most welcome. Absolutely, yeah. Where is the best place for people to sort of hang out with you? Is it Instagram, Facebook?
Full disclosure. I live in Canada where there are many seasons, and I go through there's a reason why I need to let go of some of social media. So it depends on the season. Sometimes I'm very present on Instagram and Facebook, and then I can go 2 months without saying a peep. And I've learned to not apologize for it. I hibernate in January. It is what it is. With that being said, so OT's Gone Rogue is the name of my podcast that's coming up, but it is also the name of my Facebook group. So it's a free Facebook community, OT's Gone Rogue. And then melissalapointe.com is the best place to go. So we do have different training programs. We have some master classes. That's where information on my coaching community. Yeah, we have everything there under melissalapointe.com. So that would be the best place. And then, of course, well, you can find my email through there as well. We have everything on the melissalapointe.com website. And then, OT's Gone Rogue, we are creating an Instagram account. My person starts today, actually. I'm not going to be managing that because we need a consistent presence. And instead of beating myself up for not being consistent, as the CEO, I'm recognizing that it is a problem to be solved and I've outsourced it. So I don't even have the sign-in details for the OT's Gone Rogue Instagram profile.
Wow.
We'll find out. She has a metric that she has to report in our business dashboard, and she has in terms of a KPI and performance review, and she's owning it. So that's the direction we're going, because we need a consistent presence, and it's not going to come from me.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
It's a good decision. Yeah.
I can stick to my zone of genius and hibernate and create programs and do the coaching. And then you can follow me at Melissa M. LaPointe. Again, I'm quirky in that I show up and then I post multiple times a day and then I go silent again.
Yeah, that's good. That's all right. Yeah. But that's owning it.
I'm owning it.
Yeah, that's good. Well, Melissa, thank you once again for coming on the Pelvic Bruno podcast, and we'll see you again very soon.
My pleasure, Claire. Take care.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of the OT's Gone Rogue podcast, where we're all about making deeper connections by leaning into the difficult conversations. Make sure you're subscribed if you haven't already, because we've got some more awesome episodes coming your way. Take care, and we'll see you next week.